4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Turkey state-run news agency says U.S. airstrikes and Turkish artillery fire have combined to kill 104 Islamist militants in northern Syria. The news agency reported Saturday the strikes came late Friday as retaliation just hours after rockets fired from IS-held territory hit Turkey's border province of Kilis, wounding 5 people. The Turkish media outlet reported the U.S.-led strikes in Syria also destroyed 7 buildings used as a headquarters by IS. So far this year, 21 people have been killed in Kilis and many more wounded due to cross-border missile attacks from Syria. Russian leader Vladimir Putin says he will respond to the defensive missile system the United States and its partners are building in Eastern Europe because it threatens his country's security. The Russian president said strong countermeasures will be enacted to the NATO deployment, and he emphasized that his country is reacting to the Western action, not making the first move in a confrontation. Putin spoke to reporters in Athens, where he met with Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras on Friday. An open letter signed by 150 health experts is calling for the upcoming Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro to be postponed or moved because of the Zika virus outbreak. The signatory said Friday that to hold the Games would be irresponsible and unethical. In an opposing view, the director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden, says there's no public health reason to cancel or delay the Olympics. This is VOA News. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas told a gathering of the Arab League Saturday that the body he represents is ready to accept a fair and just peace based on internationally recognized UN resolutions in accordance with the 2003 Arab Peace Initiative. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Arab League foreign ministers met Saturday at the group's headquarters here in Cairo to discuss resumption of the long-stalled Arab-Israeli peace process. France has offered to host a peace conference on June 3rd to help jumpstart negotiations. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas told the gathering that his side was willing to attend the conference and resume talks, but in accordance with previously stipulated conditions. He says that the ultimate goal of the peace process is the two-state solution. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Memorial Day is an American holiday observed on the last Monday of May that honors men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. U.S. President Barack Obama urged Americans on this Memorial weekend to thank the country's veterans. He spoke Saturday in his weekly address.
So this Memorial weekend, I hope you'll join me in acts of remembrance. Lay a flower or plant a flag at a fallen hero's final resting place. Reach out to a Gold Star family in your community and listen to the story that they have to tell. Send a care package to our troops overseas. Volunteer to make a Wounded Warrior's Day a little easier. Or hire a veteran who's ready and willing to serve at home just as they did abroad.
Memorial Day is the traditional beginning of the summer season in the United States. As one of the world's largest motorcycle rallies rolls into the American capital this weekend, one person will be hoping the rumble of hundreds of thousands of bikes will draw even more attention to his presidential run. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump will be in Washington, D.C. Sunday to lend his support to the annual Rolling Thunder motorcycle ride. Bloomberg Politics reports Trump is scheduled to speak at the event. Pakistan's prime minister will undergo open-heart surgery next week. Nawaz Sharif will have his second cardiac operation in 5 years in London on Tuesday. The prime minister's daughter, Maryam Nawaz Sharif, has written about the upcoming operation on her Twitter account. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
There is no law that allows the police to take that kind of unilateral action without first going to court or without having a law backing them. So that clearly is a suggestion that cannot work.
The Ghanaian Inspector General of Police comes under fire for suggesting a plan to block social media during the November general election.
It's a very, very unfortunate development because the law clearly states that I should be given all the entitlements and all the benefits that are approved by the office of the Lord Mayor.
The Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala, demands his salaries that were withheld since 2013 after he was controversially impeached.
There has been a massive migrant wave from Africa to Italy this week. More than 15,000 people have been rescued in the last day in the Sicily Channel.
And Italian vessels continue to help rescue migrants from boats trying to reach Europe from North Africa in the last 24 hours. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Ghanaian opposition political parties, including the New Patriotic Party, or NPP, have sharply rejected suggestions by Inspector General of Police to block the use of all social media for 2 days during the upcoming November general election. John Kudalo suggested that there could be a ban during the elections from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. to ensure social media platforms are not used to send misleading information that could destabilize the country during the polls. But Dominic Nitiwul, deputy minority leader in parliament, told me it will be illegal for the police to ban social platforms, which he says will inhibit the freedom of speech as guaranteed under the Constitution.
Clearly, that is against the law. It's unconstitutional. The police don't have that kind of power in by our laws, by our constitution, because there is no law that allows the police to take that kind of unilateral action without first going to court or without having a law backing them. So that clearly is a suggestion that cannot work. If anybody attempts it, then the person will be due an unlawful act. And I don't believe that the police, who are supposed to keep the law or have checked the law, will be the people who infringe upon the law in the first place. So for us, as opposition, we have said clearly since morning that it's unlawful, it's unacceptable. We will not accept it. We will fight it in court if the police were to attempt to do such a thing, because there is no law backing. Our constitution is very clear of freedom of speech, freedom of association, and you cannot do any law or you cannot enact a legislation to ban it.
Some people are suggesting that the police, although they are mandated by the Constitution to enforce the laws of freedom of speech guaranteed under the Constitution, the police is also mandated to protect individuals. And as such, they have to use all means necessary, including the possible banning of social media platforms for a specified number of days, if indeed it will help create stability and not create disaffection and undermine the territorial integrity of the country. What is your reaction to that?
Unfortunately, the police may have the power to be able to protect, and that's their core duty to do, protect lives and property according to law. And that is the catchword, underline the word according to law. We are not in the era of the rule of man. We are in the era of the rule of law. So if the police have a mandate, that mandate must be lawful. The police cannot just preempt that some people may use social media for mischief and so they will ban it. They must be able to take any action. That action must be subjected to the laws of Ghana. Secondly, even the traditional media, there are people in Ghana who use traditional media to slander people, to attack people, to cause mayhem. Are the police saying that after banning social media, they're going to ban traditional media? Thirdly, at no point over the last three election cycles in Ghana, when social media have been actively used within the period on election day and before elections, we've never had cause to say that it's because of social media that there's a fight in any part of Ghana. So what is the justification for anybody to suddenly wake up and say that he feels that social media could be used to create problems when there's no evidence?
Will the political parties opposed to such a move engage the police to address this concern before it gets to November, where possible action could be taken?
If you listen to the media platforms, if you listen to the talk shows, you listen to the television shows, you listen to the analysts across the country, the length and depth of the country, it was very, very clear. That is very unpopular. No Ghanaian is happy about it, and the political parties are not happy about it. And I think the police are Ghanaians, and they are listening. And it's very clear that they will not go there any longer. I think they will listen to the people. If they attempted to unblock the parliament, they will step in and stop them.
If the police chief, or for that matter, the police service decides to go to court to seek a legal backing for them to put such a move there, will political parties, particularly yours, the New Patriotic Party, then adhere to that?
I believe that the police will find it very difficult to get any court that will give them that backing. It may be very, very difficult. I'm not too sure that the police will win in a case like that in the law court in Ghana. But be it that way, they can try it and let's see. But I can tell you that the NPP will fight this canker that may come. We have moved away. In 2000, there was a law that people could use to jail people because they believe you've written something against them, or the media has raised some scandalous issues against them. We came to repeal it. And NPP is not going back. We are for press freedom. We are for freedom of speech. That is what we stand for. So anything that resembles it, or anything that the government through the police want to introduce, we will fight it to the hill. And I'm not sure that the government itself wants to embarrass itself too close to an election to say that you ban social media. Social media is one of the most popular means of communication by our young people. And I'm not sure any government will want to do that, or will even ask to do that. And you are just setting yourself for it still. Politically, it's too risky for anybody to think about it. Trust me. It won't happen. Nothing better.
Dominic Nittiwal is the Deputy Minority Leader in Parliament from the Ghanaian main opposition, the New Patriotic Party, NPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. The Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala, Erias Lukwago, says he will seek legal redress to put pressure on the Kampala City Authority to pay his salaries that were withheld since 2013. He was never paid after he was controversially impeached following accusations of abuse of office, among other alleged offences. Lukwago told me he is legally entitled to his salaries since he remains the legitimate Lord Mayor of Kampala.
It's a very, very unfortunate development because the law clearly states that I should be given all the entitlements and all the benefits that accrue to the office of the Lord Mayor. But since November 2013, nothing of the sort has been remitted to my account. Yet what they claim to be the legal impediment is neither here nor there. At the beginning of this financial year, Parliament appropriated the sum of 500 million Uganda shillings toward that particular purpose, and this around, I think, $150,000. Up to now, they have not paid it. So what I should do and what I intend to do after taking the oath next week, I'll cause the notice to be served on whoever is supposed to clear these areas. If they remain adamant, I'll have no choice but to seek for legal redress.
KCC officials are saying that because you were successfully impeached, if you are impeached from office, then you could not possibly be paid for it. You don't seem to agree why.
That's absolute trash, because I was never legally impeached, and they know that. In fact, when they carried out that botched impeachment, they wanted to have it reconducted by election. I successfully sought an injunction from court. The chairman electoral commission was subpoenaed and directed to stop the impeachment. Even the minister in charge of Kampala, who presided over that botched impeachment, was equally condemned by court as a contemner, as a person who had defied the court order. The same order was passed against the Attorney General who advised them to do that. The bottom line is that there was no impeachment legally carried out. So whatever they are saying is neither here nor there.
You are an attorney for presidential candidate of the FDC, Dr. Chisa Besigye. He's supposed to appear in court on the 1st of June. You are supposed to be sworn in officially as the Lord Mayor of the capital city, Kampala. How are you going to divide yourself into two in this very difficult circumstances happening on the same day of June 1?
According to the national electoral calendar, we're supposed to take oath on the 20th of this month. But unfortunately, for some reason, he decided to postpone the swearing-in ceremony, giving him the reason. And that day, as I said, was chosen without consulting us. It's very, very unfortunate. And I'm reading the foul claim to all this. It wasn't definitely done in good faith. But that said, I have no choice but to go and take the oath on that very day. But at the same time, I have to appear before the courts of law on the same day, which is really very, very unfortunate. So I'm trying to work out a program whereby I have to appear before court in the morning together with my colleagues who are supposed to represent Dr. Chisabesigye, because the court matter is coming up at 9 in the morning. And thereafter, I'll proceed to stay hall for the swearing-in ceremony, which I think will begin right thereafter. But I want to ask them to begin with the councillors so that I be permitted to arrive at around midday and thereafter take the oath and deliver my inaugural speech. But they are trying to really sabotage. They are not doing this in good faith. It's something which is done deliberately to frustrate all our programs of securing the bail or causing the release of Dr. Chisa Besigye.
Is your office ready for your use after you are sworn in?
Well, I must say, in all honesty, at least on that front, they are a bit forthcoming. They are a little bit positive because when I sent my staff yesterday to begin on the work of refurbishing the office, cleaning it, listing items which require replacement, like the rotten furniture and whatnot, their response was good. Initially, yes, there were some hiccups. They had blocked them. But subsequently, they yielded and accepted them to open the office. So as we talk right now, the renovation are in Tokyo, yeah, they are ongoing, and of course, the replacement of the rotten furniture, I'm sure, will also be done in due course. So hopefully, they will not make a U-turn along the way, and they will continue with the program. And if that happens, certainly by 1st of June, the office will be ready for occupation.
Erias Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala. He spoke with me from Kampala. August 4 will mark a turning point in trade relations between Cameroon and the European Union. The date marks the scheduled implementation of an economic partnership agreement, which calls for the dismantling of trade barriers between Europe and the African, Caribbean and Pacific, or ACP, states. With a few months to go, the pros and cons of the new deal are once again claiming the headlines in the Central African nation, as Intarieke Divine Jr. reports for VOA from the Cameroonian commercial capital, Douala.
It has taken protracted and at times tense negotiations to get to this point. The enforcement of the Economic Partnership Agreements, or EPAs, introduced in 2000 follows the expired Cotonou Accord between the European Union and many developing countries. For over 30 years, it granted ACP exports non-reciprocal duty and quota-free access to European markets. But the World Trade Organization said the accord was biased and did not meet new global rules governing free trade. For the EU, the economic partnership agreements solved the problem. They are also open to all developing countries, not just those that belonged to the ACP. For many African civil society and business leaders, as well as farmers' organizations, the EPAs are tougher than they imagined. They say the new arrangement could transform the continent into a litter bin for subsidized EU products and quash much-needed customs revenues. In fact, as of October 2014, only 49 ACP states had signed an EPA. Babisa Kana is an economist and CEO of the business counseling firm Cabinet Prescriptor in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. He says Africa is unprepared for the EPAs.
Comparing competition with countries, you start competing with others because you have very strong, you know, system of infrastructure and best practices in business environment.
In some parts of the world, the EPAs have faced widespread skepticism and stalemated negotiations. In response, the EU threatened to begin imposing tariffs and quotas on exports from countries unwilling to ink the deal by October 1, 2014. Critics say that is how, at the 11th hour, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, buckled under pressure to sign the agreement. In comparison, the nearby Six Nation Economic and Monetary Community of Central Africa, CEMAC, has not yet signed. But Cameroon dumbfounded its neighbors by unilaterally signing a country-tailored interim EPA in January 2009. 5 years later, the country notified the EU it had ratified the agreement. CEMAC states have scorned Cameroon's move, but Cameroon's finance minister Alamin Ousmane May remains optimistic. He says the EPA will not eclipse Cameroon's bilateral trading deals with other countries like China. And he says the full implementation of the EPA will see Cameroon progressively allowing duty and quota-free entry for 80% of EU exports. In his view, it's a windfall for the country's economy.
This agreement gives member parties the possibility to establish a restriction list. Second, this economic partnership agreement is implemented not immediately. You have a window of roughly, I think, 10 years to implement. Third, before opening up fully, you have the possibility to get assistance to upgrade your economy to compete properly with the rest of the world.
Part of the assistance mentioned by the finance minister includes a $13 million development funding package. The deal's supporters say the funding will help improve basic infrastructure, including farm-to-market roads. It will also mend the business climate as well as boost the capacities of the country's productive sectors. Mary Rose Chantal Lombard, director of the Enterprise Upgrading Office, says currently some 600 small and medium enterprises are benefiting from the assistance by producing quality goods that meet global standards. Elsewhere, she says, manufacturers have a golden opportunity to transform their businesses. Farmers, for example, will be able to mechanize processes with the acquisition of cheap-selling caterpillars and other inputs imported from Europe. But some observers say Cameroonian farmers are suffering from a global drop in the price of African raw materials. They say the government should initially restrict agricultural products coming from the EU beginning in August. Reporting for VOA News, I'm Tarike Devon Jr. in Douala, Cameroon.
Italian vessels continue to help rescue migrants from boats trying to reach Europe from North Africa in the last 24 hours. More than 31,000 migrants have reached Italy by boat so far this year. Humanitarian organizations say the sea route between Libya and Italy is now the main route for asylum seekers heading for Europe after an EU deal on migrants with Turkey dramatically slowed the flow of people reaching Greece. For the latest on the plight of these African migrants, reporter Douglas Impuga reached VOA reporter Antonella Sferesa in Palermo, the capital of the Italian island of Sicily.
There has been a massive migrant wave from Africa to Italy this week. More than 15,000 people have been rescued in the last day in the Sicily Channel by the Italian Coast Guard, the European rescue boats, and by humanitarian organization vessels. And other rescue operations actually are ongoing today. Unfortunately, as we know, the week has been very dramatic with many casualties. Three shipwrecks in 3 days, the last one yesterday, with only 45 bodies recovered and hundreds may have drowned. So although the good weather condition and the calm sea crossing the Mediterranean is still a very dangerous trip as migrants are piled into flimsy rubber boats or old fishing vessels, the migrants, we have to remember that many of them do not know how to swim, and they don't have a life jacket. So,
and there are fears that with the improvement in the weather conditions, there may be more immigrants coming in. What's the government trying to do to stop that?
There is not much that the government can do. The Italian government repeated that Italy will not allow people to drown in the Mediterranean. We have to save the people who try to reach Italy. The only thing that the Italian government is trying to do is trying to convince the European Union to cooperate, but they are not cooperating very much. According to officials, 200,000 migrants are expected to arrive this year. But you have to consider that the European Union population is estimated to be 500 million. So we can understand that 200,000 migrants arriving in Italy is not an alarming number, as some political parties say. But it is mainly a political issue. Many European countries are refusing to relocate migrants. And therefore, all the pressure is put on Italy, and actually on Sicily in particular, because all these rescue boats are arriving in this hour in the Sicilian ports, which are under stress for the endless arrivals of these days.
With the coming into force of the European Union deal on migrants with Turkey, does Italy now bear a burden to cater for these migrants?
Well, migration experts, first of all, expected the Syrians to shift back to Libya following this EU-Turkey deal you talked about. But until this week, the flow to Italy has almost exclusively been driven by people from sub-Saharan countries. The European Union is refusing, as I said before, to relocate the migrants. In September, the European countries sign an agreement in Brussels according to which 36,000 migrants should be relocated in 2 years. Insofar, from September to now, only 581 migrants have been relocated from Italy to other European countries. And as you can see, at this rate, we are going nowhere.
And lastly, Antonella, most of these being rescued are from sub-Saharan Africa. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, unfortunately, because with the new European hotspot system approach, those claiming asylum are immediately channeled into an asylum procedure and hosted in a reception center, while those who are not considered in need of protection are returned to the countries of origin. But several human rights associations have been denouncing the ASTI method used to separate real asylum seekers from those who are just economic migrants. Because, you see, this definition is very controversial. Nonetheless, if you are from places such as Eritrea, Nigeria, Sudan, or Gambia, your chances of being rejected are extremely high. So we are talking about a system, a very discriminatory system that is increasing clandestinity.
That was VOA reporter Antonella Sferraza. She spoke with reporter Douglas Impoga from Palermo, Sicily. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Jumbo, jump, we'll be fine, mommy. Oh, Mamma is black dirt. She's a big girl. Jump, I don't get so no more. Come back, you know, oh. Mama, you're a ballad, yo. If your papa no want us to marry, yo, I'm a lawyer, you know. No, girl, I'm down for you, don't forget. The love me, I get it for you. Mama, no go compare. Oh. But then your father is violent. Ole mi de, ole o. Jumbo. Ole you define that yo. Your mother is black dot. She's a big character. Jumbo. I beg your girl. Your father is violent. Ole mi de, ole o. Jumbo. We'll be fine, mommy. Your mother is black dot. She's a big character. Jumbo, I don't get so no more.
When you go use me back. Emperor Jesus. You see now we worldwide.
Girls, them pretty, pretty. Give them 100, give them 50. J-U-A-C. Small church, don't turn ministry. Napo. I want to be like Tiboro on my bow. Them don't they fear. Swagger man, worry them everywhere. Call me on the phone, ask me how we they go. I tell them 3 million, 3 million. Again. How the AFB, yeah, make them check. Come on, at 3 billion, 3 billion. Again.
It's a lot and boiling, boiling. Why not be I?
nana kula nyamu ibe keno kwifu nanya oh baby 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 mo kedi for ye di kwam kamele mele paradada oh kadiro oh krikata beautiful baby oh krikata flavor na bracket yo oh baby mo my beautiful baby yo.
Let's just be as one, hey. My beautiful, beautiful baby, yeah, yeah. Yes, I love you, I hope you love me.
Yeah. shaking your waist, I'm moving your waist on me. The way you do your waist, girl, you shaking your waist, I'm moving your waist on me. Baby, dance in my cosa, the way you dance in my cosa. Over top, dance in my cosa, the way you dance in my cosa. The way you do your waist, girl, you shaking your waist, I'm moving your waist on me. The way you do your waist, girl, you shaking your waist, I'm moving your waist on me. Give it to me, na na. I want it now, now. Give it to me harder. You know I want it now, now. Me na saka ni chaze na we. Na na na. So me na wait up wa shoka na jembe. Na na na. Na butu ele lo ya lo bite. Tukete toko la lawa. DJ bakisa miziko katate. Tukete toko la lawa. Na butu ele lo ya lo bite. Tukete toko la lawa. DJ matisa miziko katate. Tukete toko la lawa. I'm loving the way that you shake. Give it to me. Can you bad? I'm loving the way that you shake. Oh. Cause me sugar boy, I could give you what you want. Oh. Make you dance it, dance. Oh. All the girls that like me, from Liberia to Congo. Hey. All the girls that like me, from Liberia to Congo. Baby, dance on my tongue. I wanna see you move to the beat. Baby, dance on my tongue. I wanna see you move to the beat.
Can you bad? I'm loving the way that you shake.
Music from the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Howie Smith, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, three things cause sorrow to flee: water, green trees, and a beautiful face. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his recent trip to Vietnam, President Barack Obama highlighted the dramatic progress of U.S.-Vietnam relations in recent years and outlined areas where we hope to deepen our partnership in the future, including trade and investment, security cooperation, people-to-people exchanges, and global issues like climate change and health. President Obama highlighted our strong economic ties with over $45 billion in bilateral trade and growing investment, including a $12 billion deal between Boeing and Vietjet, announced during the president's visit. He also reiterated the United States' commitment to ratifying the Trans-Pacific Partnership and stressed the importance of Vietnam fully implementing its commitments under this trade agreement, including on labor rights. In addition, President Obama announced the lifting of the decades-old arms embargo, which removes a lingering vestige of the Cold War and ensures that Vietnam has access to the equipment it needs to defend itself. The change also underscores the commitment of the United States to a fully normalized relationship with Vietnam, including strong defense ties with Vietnam and the region for the long term. And at a time of tension in the South China Sea, the United States will support the peaceful resolution of disputes, including through arbitration under international law. Nations are sovereign, no matter how large or small a nation may be. Its sovereignty should be respected and its territory should not be violated, said President Obama. The president stressed that continued progress on human rights and legal reform was key to Vietnam and the U.S.-Vietnam relationship reaching its full potential. It's my hope that the government of Vietnam comes to recognize what we've recognized and what so many countries around the world have recognized, that it's very hard to prosper in this modern economy if you haven't fully unleashed the potential of your people, President Obama said. President Obama met with civil society members during his visit, though some were regrettably prevented from attending the meeting. President Obama reiterated the importance of religious freedom and highlighted recent exchanges on the law on religion and belief. When there is freedom of religion, it not only allows people to fully express the love and compassion that are at the heart of all great religions, but it allows faith groups to serve their communities through schools and hospitals and care for the poor and the vulnerable, the president said. President Obama expressed great hope for the U.S.-Vietnam partnership going forward, rooted in the friendship and shared aspirations of our peoples.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.